The Mysterious Circumstances podcast is hosted by Justin Rimmel. This is an American Crimecast production. Visit us at our new home at accproductions.org. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Well, everybody, welcome to Mysterious Circumstances Podcast, and I got a special episode for you today. How this all came about was pretty much you had hit me up on social media, and we were sitting there talking for a minute, and I don't know, man, you brought up a really interesting point about how nobody gets to hear these kinds of stories, and nobody gets to hear these sides of the stories. And pretty much what it is my guest today had to kill somebody in self-defense, and it was ruled self-defense, and we're going to talk about what happened and how it happened and the aftermath, the after effects of it, and how it affected his life afterward and all that good stuff. So I suppose if you want to, man, go ahead and introduce yourself, and we can kind of go from there, I suppose.
Well, my name's Derek. I go by my middle name, Lane. I'm from Hickory, North Carolina, 35 years old. I actually want to first thank you for the chance to be on the show, man.
Oh, dude, no problem. Yeah, that was great for you. I appreciate that, man. And dude, you sent me probably one of the greatest messages I ever got, man. I was like, this dude's fucking legit, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was a word of it.
I appreciate it.
Like, how you do things and the way you present the cases that you do.
I appreciate that, man. So I guess, how did you start getting into, this is probably a shitty ironic question, man, but how'd you start getting into true crime podcasts and stuff?
It's actually only been a few years since I've been into true crime. I actually started off listening to a few episodes of Siri.
Yeah.
And once I listened to that, it just seemed like, you know, a genre that really, I've always just liked true crime. There's something about it. About the shows on TV, like 48 hours and things like that. But once I listened to Serial, like, I started getting into other shows like Sword and Scale and Generation Y and Super Crime Garage. And then I found you just searching one day, man. And ever since then, I like the case that you present. You seem to, you know, always hit on some of the subjects that I like myself too.
Cool. So I guess without further ado, Lane, we, you know, like in the messages we exchanged, I had told you we were talking about the Haley Cummings case, and, you know, I had mentioned, like, you know, everybody deserves to have their story told, and I'm pretty fucking sure your story has not been told to the fullest extent, and...
No, I've never found a platform to my story before and what happened, you know, a couple of years ago. I've actually tried with the Risk podcast. They seemed interested at first, but, you know, it just seemed like you had to go through, they had this process you had to go through where you had to do this project that they wanted you to do, for storytelling for like a couple of months before they would even consider it. And, you know, it seemed like more of a hassle than it should be.
Yeah, fuck off.
I found you and talked to you about it. You know, you were very open to it.
And oh, yeah.
I want to be able to tell you. I want people to be able to hear what happened, to hear my side of the story, because, you know, it's like I say, it's not very often you get to hear a story from this perspective. And, you know, I hope it helps someone who may be in the same position.
Yeah.
Who may be going through the same thing.
Yeah, and that's fucking awesome, man. And yeah, there ain't no hoops to jump through on this podcast, man. You just basically come on, fucking say what you gotta say. And I'm really eager, and yeah. I specifically told you, I was like, I don't want to hear too many of the details, because I want to be like a listener and listen to this story as it unfolds. I do know, you know, some details I did, you know, I read a lot of newspaper articles on it and stuff like that. And, I mean, it's really, right. It's really intriguing, and I'm eager to hear, I guess, your story, man. So, without, you know, any further ado, I guess, let's start from the beginning, I suppose, and, you know, just a basic rundown, I guess, on August 4th, 2015, well, I guess just go ahead and tell us, you know, in a short version, real quick, just what happened on August 4th, 2015.
Well, before you get to August 4th, 2015, you got to go back to when I was 12 years old.
Let's do it.
My mom had just left my dad. She was, I guess, driving down the road one day, and this big dude whistled at her, and she went back to see who it was, and it turned out to be him. His name was Tony. She brought him around us, and we met him, and it just so happened that he had actually been my ball coach, my baseball coach when I was younger. You know, we got along with him okay. He was good to us at first. You know, everything was great, man. He seemed like he made my mom happy. You know? It seemed like she had already been through an abusive relationship with my dad, and she needed something not so physical, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, nobody deserves to be beat on, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I, you know, being 6'3", 50 like he was, man, you know, I think she found some security in his size and his stature too. You know, so, you know, I think that's something that she fell in love with about him too. But through the years there, he continued being my baseball coach and my basketball coach, and they eventually ended up getting married a couple of years later. And I think it was shortly after they had gotten married, he became more verbally abusive. And I think that's the way the way it happens with a lot of couples. You know, they get together and right. And once they get comfortable, they realize that they can push the boundaries further and further out and be more verbally abusive. And once they understand that you're not going anywhere and you're not leaving, if they won't leave when I yell at them, maybe let's see what happens when I cuss at them. So they'll start cursing at them, and then once they realize you won't leave them, or maybe, you know, I can get a little more comfortable and put my hands on them. You know? So mm-hmm. I think that's maybe what happened with him is he got comfortable and relaxed. You know, I think he just realized that my mom wasn't the type of woman who was just going to walk out for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, my mom put up with physical abuse from my dad for years, but she left him, and now she's with another guy who is starting doing the same thing to her. But I don't know why she didn't. You know, the first sign of the abuse, but you know, she didn't. And he would put his hands on her every once in a while, and you know, it would scare us kids. It wasn't something that was even to be around them. As the years went on, you know, it got a little worse. He would be, you know, when times were good, they were really good. When times were bad, they were really bad, you know. And I don't know if I ever really felt a connection with my stepdad, and I did with my dad, but, you know, we loved him. You know, he was really good to us. Like, at Christmas, he would buy us good gifts, you know, and he was my baseball coach, he was my sister's ball coach, you know, he was a good man, you know. I mean, if you made him mad, he felt like the only way to handle his problems was to put his hands on. And when he would punish me and my sister, you know, he would maybe go a little overboard. You know, he would whip us with, you know, just about whatever he could grab. When he would get mad at my mom, he would scream and yell at her, and I just don't know if he knew how to control his anger. So over the years, there were a couple times where he would hit her, and there was one fight I remember they got into where he hit my mom and he broke her hand, and she had to have her wedding band cut off of her hand at the hospital because her hand swelled up around her. She couldn't get it off. You know, and there were, you know, kids, that affects kids real bad, man. You know, I mean,
yeah.
That's something that's good for kids to be around. I remember one night when he hit my mom. After an argument, that I went in the kitchen and got his orange juice out of the refrigerator and poured some rat poison from underneath the sink in it and put it in the fridge, and I went back and laid down, And I thought, you know, what's going to happen if he gets up or my mom gets up and brings that, or if my sister does? And I kind of got scared, so I just went and pulled it back out. And then I got to thinking, you know, like, you know, you can't just kill somebody, you know, when you're mad at them. You got to work through this, because that's, you know, that's what my mom always tried to instill in me, was never give up. You know, always try to work hard and be patient. You know, I think that's what kept her going through her relationship with me and kept me going through it all too, was trying to, at least hoping that things would get better. So I guess you could say that, you know, growing up, things were all right, but, you know, he was abusive at times, you know, and she stayed with him, you know. So, I mean...
Well, there's a lot of situations where it's, you know, you have those people that try to find the one good thing in somebody and justify all the bad stuff with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in a couple of relationships myself, you know, that were verbally abusive, and, you know, I mean, I understand, you know, it's not so easy sometimes for people to just walk away because you love somebody you want to be with. I understand, you know, but when it gets to the point where it's physical abuse, I think it's time to tell them, you know, to get close, because I don't see how it could do anything but get worse.
Good fucking point, man.
But like I said, man, I never really felt a connection with him like I did with my dad. I loved him. I really did love the man. But he could be abused too, you know, and I mean, that's just the way it was. It was, I guess it wasn't to the point where it was enough to where, you know, it happened all the time.
But, yeah.
You know, I would say at least a couple of times a year.
Yeah.
It was scary. And I just got to the point, man, where I just couldn't put up with him anymore. I couldn't. There's no way. I had to leave. So I left home. And I think some of my abusive relationships actually caused me to want to self-medicate. So I found drugs, became an opiate addict. And a heroin addict. That drove an even bigger wedge between me and my stepdad, because mom favored me a lot and like I said, my mom was the kind that would never give up on anything or anybody. You know, I guess you could say baby me at times.
Mm-hmm.
And it would piss my stepdad off, you know, because he would get jealous of her love for me. I think that drove an even bigger wedge between me and him.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know what I'm saying, now that I've actually been clean for almost 2.5 years now, I understand that he had every right to be upset. I mean, it was his wife. I think that I caused a lot of problems in their relationship. And that's what makes this situation even harder, because I know that I'm to blame for a lot of their problems. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have a platform to tell my story, because I want people to understand that, you know, when you read the article in the paper, it makes him look bad. It makes my stepdad look bad, but there are sides of this story that I think people need to hear and understand, because I want them to know that I feel responsibility. I feel the responsibility falls on me. Anyway, after I had moved out and got on drugs, like I said, it drove an even bigger wedge between me and my stepdad. But I didn't really keep up with, you know, their life much. I wasn't around too much. I was always off on my own. There was a time where I had moved to South Carolina. And what's so funny about today is today's July 30th. And 7 years ago today, I got really, really high and on pills, alcohol, and crack, and I robbed a gas station in Camden, South Carolina. And I was with my girlfriend, and we were staying in a motel, and I had just met her recently, you know, before that, like a couple months before that, but she stuck with me. And that night I left the motel room and I went and robbed a gas station, and I robbed it with a ice pick. I didn't hurt the cashier, but she gave me the money. And when I left, I was about 100 feet away from the gas station and 100 feet from my motel door when a cop car hit me in the back of the leg, and the cop he arrested me. He didn't pat me down. And I think when I left the gas station, I had stuck the ice pick down in my back pocket of my parachute. And he didn't pat me down, and he put me back in the back of the police car and took me to the gas station to be identified by the cashier. While he was inside, I realized that I still had the ice pick on me. So I slid to the side with my hands up behind my back, and I reached down into my back pocket, pulled out the ice pick, threw it in the floor of the cop car, and kicked it up underneath the seat.
Yep.
After they took me to the jail, about 6 months later, on my birthday, January 24th, 2011, I went to court, and the lawyer asked me, he said, "Where was the weapon?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You had an ice pick." I said, "I don't know where it's at." He said, "Well, you're lucky because they could keep the charge of armed robbery, and I was facing 30 years, but," he said, "since they couldn't find the weapon, you're going in front of the judge with an open plea of common law robbery from 0 to 5, and facing a sentence of 0 to 5 years. So they never found the ice pick. and I ended up getting 3 years, and I got out March 1st, 2012. And luckily enough, my girlfriend still stayed with me, stayed true.
It's awesome.
Her up here to North Carolina, and my sister. And my sister got her a job and car, and she had a place waiting for us when we got out.
That's so awesome.
It was hard for me, where my stepdad plays into all this is, it was hard for me to find a job after I got out of prison. So I moved back in with my mom and my stepdad. Things were going okay, but there was still that wedge between me and my stepdad. You know, we tried to get along, and we did the best that we could. We made it work for a while. But obviously, when a situation gets too hot, it's liable to explode.
Yeah. And
that's what happened on Thanksgiving of 2014. I have an English bulldog. His name is Romeo. And after, we hadn't had him too long, but after the Thanksgiving meal, I had gave my dog a big ham bone, not knowing that you weren't supposed to give those to English bulldogs because their airways and their digestive tract are very small, a lot smaller than normal dogs. Any kind of bone can be dangerous to them. Well, after I gave him a big ham bone, about 3 minutes later, I looked down and he had already devoured half of it. This thing was about the length of a football, and it was very big, and he had already ate half of it. Well, I took the other half from him. For a whole week after that, my dog couldn't use the bathroom. He tried to poop, but he couldn't. And so I looked up, you know, what to do, and I started feeding him rice and stuff, trying to, you know, comfort his digestive tract. And one day my stepdad, Tony, he came home from work, grabbed my English bulldog up and took him outside and was messing with him rough. My stepdad was always a rough guy. He was always playing rough with him. And he was playing rough with my dog, and I was trying to tell him, you know, "Hey, please, you know, be easy with him because he's not using the bathroom." Well, my stepdad, he would flip out if he got mad. Like, there was no middle with him. Like, it was either really calm or really upset. And he flipped out, went back in the house, slammed the door, and I heard him yell, "Just chuck it." So I walked back in and sat down. My mom came in there and said, "What was it?" I said, "He's out there playing with the dog real hard." And I said, "He's going to hurt him. You know," I said, "I'm trying to take care of him and be gentle with him. He's out there just playing rough with him." Well, he heard me say that, Tony did. He came back in the living room and he said, "You can just keep the damn dog. Take him and get out of here." And I said, "Well, I fucking will." When I said that, he came at me and he hit me for the first time ever in the face with his fist. And it caught me off guard because, like I said, he's never done it. And he knocked me over, and he jumped on top of me. My mom got in between me and him, tried to. All the while, my dog is biting him and my mom. And he grabs my mom and slings her off of him. And he reaches over and grabs my hand toward the fog and starts choking. Well, I stood up, and there was no way we could release his grip off his neck. But I tried to think of a way to get him off of my dog.
Yeah.
So I started to be calm. And I said, "Tony, Dad, please don't do this. Please stop." And I think something about me calling him Dad, hitting his heartstrings, just let go of him. And we got up and walked off. And we both went into our room. And I think it was about an hour later, I walked in the room and I was in tears, and he was in tears. And, you know, we sat down and hugged each other, and he promised he would never lay his hands on me again, and I promised I would never smart off to him again like that. And things were okay. So that was, you know, that was one of the things that led up to what happened in 2015, just a year, almost a year later. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
I mean, what did your sister have the same kind of, you know, problems? Because she, after you left, your sister was still around in the house, right? Did she have any of the same kind of issues?
The thing is, after her, my mom and my dad split up, she went to live with my dad.
Okay.
And, you know, I think, looking back on that, I think it would have been better if I actually would have lived with my dad too, because me and my sister took completely different routes in life. My sister actually graduated high school, graduated college, became a police officer, and now she works as a supervisor at a deli.
Cool.
And she is just about to buy her own house. And me, I took the road of getting kicked out of high school, having to get my GED. I got on drugs, you know, and I ended up going to prison. You know, so we had two different lives, and I think that's a big part of this all too, because my mom was so forgiving, and she would baby me, and my dad was the disciplinarian. You know, what kid wants to live with somebody who's a disciplinarian when they can live with somebody who lets them do what they want to do?
That's very true.
That was my mistake, I think, in life. My biggest mistake was choosing to live with my mom instead of my dad. Yeah, she went to live with my dad, though, and he raised her, basically. We saw each other on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
My mom was never the one to spank or hit. She would always let either Tony or my dad do it. I do appreciate that, because there's nothing like somebody who will stand by you through everything. And, you know, I was lucky to have that with my mom, because my dad's the type of guy, he would just give up in a heartbeat. He was the kind of person that, if he didn't like you or something went wrong, he was like, "Fuck, I'm not dealing with this, I'm going away." You know, he didn't care, you know what I'm saying? So to actually have my mom, you know, be that way, it was a blessing. I mean, that is what, it had ups and downs.
For sure. So I guess now that we got some back information on the situation, I guess, man, let's hear what happened. I suppose.
You want to get into what happened on August 4th?
If you're ready for it, I am.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I'll start off. The girl that I told you that I was with before I went to jail and prison, I'm still with her to this day.
That's awesome, man. That is really awesome.
She was there that night. I guess to start off, I have to tell you what kicked it all off, really. And what happened was, I had an ex-girlfriend that I had dated before I ever went to prison. Her name was Michelle. She had just recently came back into my life. I had seen her, I think, at a gas station or a restaurant or something like that, but we had met back up and exchanged phone numbers just to talk. And she came to see me on August 4th, and had told me that my stepdad had come to her, offered to pay her that she had accepted, mm-hmm. and he had been doing this for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And I didn't know whether to believe her at first, but I asked her, I said, can you tell me something where I know you're being honest? And I mean, because I don't want to take this to my mom unless I know for sure, because I know this would be the straw that would break the camel's back.
Oh, yeah.
With my mom. So she told me that my stepdad had a scar on his leg that stretched from about his hip down and close to his knee. She showed me where he worked. That was about it. That's all it took, because my stepdad had just recently, within the past couple of months, had a surgery where he had to have a vein or something taken out and put somewhere. I can't remember exactly what the surgery was, but he did have that scar, and there's no way that anybody would have even seen it, even if he was wearing shorts, because it didn't go past his knee. So I knew she was telling me the truth, and I took it to my mom. It was about 4 o'clock that day in the afternoon, and I told my mom, actually, I should back up. I was on my way home with Heather to tell my mom about it. And when I got home, I walked up to the door, and on the screen door, there was peanut butter on the screen door. And I looked down, and there was peanut butter and jelly in the floor. And as I opened the door, I walked in, and I seen what looked like deviled eggs on the stove. Laying halfway, the pot laying halfway off the eye, and what looked to be a peanut butter and jelly sandwich had slammed up against the wall and dropped down into the trash can. And I was like, what in the hell just happened here? Because the door was open, but there was nobody there. Like, no, my stepdad's truck or my mom's car wasn't there. So I said, what in the hell has just happened? So I waited, and my mom pulled in, and she was crying. And I said, Mom, what's going on? She said, he just threw that sandwich at me. And I said, Mom, what happened? She said that he was mad because I didn't have dinner done when he got home. And so I made him a sandwich, and he was going to make some other thing. And he got mad and didn't want it, so he threw it at her. And I said, that's it, man. I said, Mom, I was already going to talk to you about this anyway. I said, but you need to hear this right now, because there's no better time for you to hear this and make your decision of what you want to do than right now. So she sat down, and I told her what Michelle had told me. Immediately, she said, I want you to come in and help me pack. We're leaving right now. So I went back into my room. She went back into her room. I started packing some things up. And, you know, I was just initially going to pack, you know, what we needed for a couple of days up into a bag. So I set my laptop beside me on the bed, and I had a bag on the bed. And Heather, I guess she was somewhere down the hall in the bathroom or something.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it was about 5 minutes later, I hear this loud, boastering voice yell, what's this shit you telling lies about me? And before I could even look to visually acknowledge who was saying, this lunchbox-sized fist just lands right up against the side of my jaw and knocks me over the bed. And it was my stepdad who was telling me. He had come in and cheap-shotted me right in the side of the jaw so hard that it knocked me straight over my bed into the floor. He grabbed me up, slammed me down on the bed, and got over the top of me where his knees were almost right under my shoulders. Right in. And he pinned on a full mount. And he was just raining down punches as hard as he could onto my face, screaming at me about me lying about him. And he had reached over and grabbed my laptop, reared back, and absolutely smashed it as hard as he could over the top of my head. And by this time, my mom had dove in between us to the point where I couldn't breathe. Her knees were in my face. she was trying to push him off, and you know, in doing that, she was hurting more. But
yeah, so he has you down on the bed, and he's holding you down with his knees. Yeah, he's just, you said he was throwing just punching you in the fucking face just repeatedly, right?
Yeah, he was wailing down on me pretty hard, man. He had some, like I say, he had some lunch boxes for this, and it was not very comfortable position to be in. I'm 6'1", 180. He's, like I said, he's 6'5", 350. He was full mount over my knees and my armpits, basically, and he was just wailing down as hard as he could. And he reached over and grabbed my laptop that was laying on the bed and raised up and smashed it down over my head as hard as he could. And keep in mind now, all this has happened within like 10 or 15 second period. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just basically just kicked off. He snuck me, he jumped on top of me, and he's wailing on me. About this time is when my mom took the wind of it. And she races in to my room and dives in the fence. And when she does, her knees are up at my face. And it's even more uncomfortable because I can't breathe. I actually felt like I was going to pass out. She's trying to stop him from hitting me, and he's trying to swing around for to hit me. And he's yelling at her to get out of the way, and she's yelling at him to get off of me. And, you know, there's a verbal argument going on over my face here while he's, while I can't breathe. Finally, she, I think she got clever, and she said, "Derek did not tell me, Michelle told me," and he called my mom a liar. He said, "You're lying." And she said, no, he didn't tell me. It was Michelle who told me, and I agreed with that. Yeah, it was Michelle. It wasn't me. I didn't say anything. So he grabs my mom, stands up off of me, leads my mom very forcefully into their bedroom. I sit up, and I can hear them in there verbally arguing real loud. He's screaming, yelling, and I hear things slamming around in there. What it sounds like, the dresser doors. While I was catching my breath and getting parents back, I knew that I needed to go text her because she was leaving me. And yeah. Her and his anger was now on her, now that it was away from me. And I had just gotten the shit out of him. So I thought to myself, there's no way that I can beat this man physically. He now twice has knocked me down, got on top of me, and started punching me. And if I...
Hello?
I'm going to be able to handle this guy with just my hands. Because, you know, But I also knew at the same time that I needed to get him away from me. So, the only thing that I knew that I could do was to arm myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case. You know, that way I could protect myself and protect my mom. Mainly my mom. I really didn't care about myself at that point in time. The whole reason that I was going to go back in there and approach him in the first place was for her sake. So I thought, well, I better arm myself. So after I got my bearings back, a couple seconds later, I got up. I walked down the hall into the kitchen, and I opened up the drawer in the kitchen where the knives are. I reached in and I pulled out a butcher knife and a long steak knife. And I put the steak knife in my back pocket. The reason that I did that was because if he was to get the butcher knife away from me, I still had one that I could access to defend myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked down the hall with the butcher knife in my hand, and I walked into their room, where my mom is on one side of the bed. My stepdad is at the end of the bed on that same side of the bed, screaming and yelling at her. She's cowered, like she's afraid of him. And she would have to go past him to get out of the room. And she looked at me, and I could tell that, you know, she wanted to get out of the room, and I wanted her to be able to get out of the room, but there was no way we could get to each other without going by him. So he kind of divided us. Well, I looked at him, he looked at me, and I said to him, I said, you need to get out of this house right now. I said, because I'm tired of you hitting me. I'm tired of you putting your hands on us, and it will never, ever happen again. And he saw the knife in my hand. Like, there was no hiding that big bush knife. He saw it in my hand. When he looked down at it, he heard what I said. He came at me and grabbed me by my shirt and slammed me up against the bookshelf that was in their room, right next to the door, hallway. And he said, let me tell you something. And when he slammed me up against that bookshelf, he started throwing punches at my face again. And the only thing that I knew to do was get this man off of me. So I pulled my arm up with the butcher hand on, reared back, and swung my arm as hard as I could overhanded, and I felt the knife sink into his body. And I felt it sink almost to the hip. And immediately I pulled the knife back out, and I'm still being hit in the face, and I can't really see where I hit him. I can't really see anything, because if you've ever been in a fight, you know, while punches are hitting you in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Things are going on. You're not really anywhere but, right, you're not even in that moment. You're just, you're in fight or flight mode.
Yep.
You don't really have clear vision, clear hearing, a clear sense of anything. But I know I hit him. And while he's still slinging punches at me, I've now got my arms up in front of my face with the knife still in my hand. But at this point in time, I can feel what feels like red, or what feels like a warm liquid hitting me in my face, kind of like if somebody was like had liquid in a and straw and would blow it at me, you know, like kind of like in a pitter-patter type motion. I would feel it hit me, and then I'd feel it hit me again, then again, you know, and it didn't even occur to me what was going on, but I did notice that his punches were beginning to slow, and by this time, somehow, we had got out into the hallway, and I don't know how we got out there, but we had got out in the hallway and a few steps down the hall, and now he backs up, and he grabs up at his neck, and he looks at me and my mom. By this time, my mom's right beside of him. He's looking at me, and he's got this look in his eyes as if to say, why? That's the only thing that I could decipher from the look that he had in his eyes. Why? Why did you do this? My mom and I reached down, because he went down to one knee. We reached down, and I grabbed one arm, and she grabbed the other. And we laid him down into the floor. And as we were laying him down, it's almost as if the lights were out, or had just shut down. It's almost as if everything in his consciousness had just faded. He didn't say anything. He didn't make any sounds. He just went down, and it was at this point that I stood back up, and I looked down at the knife, and I see blood all over the knife, and I looked at my arms, and there was blood all over my arms, and I looked at my shirt, and my shirt was just covered in blood. Turns out I had hit him in the side of his neck, right where the jugular is. I think it's the carotid artery, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But, at this point, my mom begins screaming for me to get out, and So I was walking into the kitchen. Heather had locked herself in the bathroom. And somehow by this time, my sister had showed up. While I was walking outside, my sister was about 6 or 7 paces in front of me, walking away from me, looking back at me, saying, "Get away from me," like she was afraid of me. And that really confused me, because I didn't know why she would think I would hurt her. But I dropped the butcher knife in front of the microwave, which was right in front of the door, and I walked outside. I yelled at my sister. I had to. It was me or him. I think once my sister heard me say that, she looked back at me again, and I said, "I'm not going to hurt you. I wouldn't hurt you. I wouldn't hurt anybody." And my sister went back into the house, and I walked outside, and Heather followed me outside, and from the carport. I was already outside, but outside from the carport, into the open driveway. Heather came out, and she stood in front of me, and I stood in front of her. She just didn't know what to say. She didn't know what to do. She tried to control me. So I said, "I got to go back in." I went back in, and I walked to the hall and see my mom knelt over him. And by this time, I could hear him making sounds. I guess it's what agonal breathing, what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear gargling. And there was blood beginning to pour onto the floor. So I opened the closet door. My mom's yelling at me, "What are you doing?" And I threw some towels down there. I said, "I'm giving you some towels for his cut." And I said, and she, my mom kind of looked up at me with this look of worry in her eyes. And I said, "Mama, you helped him. You helped him now." And she said, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. My mom's a nurse.
Yeah.
She's been a nurse for several years. So if anybody knew what was going on, she knew. So I took off out of the house because I knew we had a firefighter that lived next door to us. And I ran over next door and I started beating on his door. His wife opened the door and he was behind her. I could see blood on the door from my hands. And I asked, "Are you a firefighter? Are you a firefighter?" I said, "Yes, I am." I said, I just stabbed my dad. I said, "I need you to come help me. He's dying. Please come help us now." They just slammed the door right in my face. And I see him pull his wife back. He slammed the door in my face. And I was like, "Are you fucking serious right now?" You know, I mean, I didn't think at the time, you know, that here's a man at this guy's door covered in blood, screaming that he just stabbed somebody. And no wonder he slammed the door in my face. You know what I'm saying? At the time, I didn't know. So I ran back to the house. And my sister, I realized my sister already called me and everything. So I just sat down. I sat down at the end of the driveway. Heather went and got me something to drink. I didn't know if I would be getting out of jail or prison anytime soon. So I said, "Heather, can you go get my methadone? Because I've been on methadone for a while now. That's what's helped keep me clean."
Yeah.
And I asked her to get my dose for me so I could take one last dose. And she went and got it, and I took it. And I waited. I just waited out in the driveway because my methadone calmed my nerves. And I was already feeling like I was about to have a heart attack.
Sure.
I needed something to help with my anxiety because I was so scared. It actually took about 30 minutes for the ambulance to get there. Cops, I guess, had to get there and make sure the scene was clear.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I came to find out why they took so long. But I seen them roll the ambulance inside, and about 10 minutes later, they come rolling them out, and his arm fell down inside the gurney. And they weren't going very fast. They weren't running or anything like that. So I'm thinking, well, maybe he's okay, because they're not in any hurry. So maybe they've got it under control and everything's all right. So the cops handcuffed me. Before they put me in the cop car, my sister yelled out to me, "It's going to be all right, honey. You're going to be out in just a little bit." So they took me to the police station. They put me in the interrogation room. Two cops came in. The first thing I wanted to know was, "Oh, me all right?" my dad a lot. They would never tell me, they just wanted to know my side of the story of what happened. So I told them. They said, well, we're going to go down and get your mom and your sister. So I brought mom and my sister up to me, and when my mom opened the door, I said, Mom, is he okay? She shook her head no. And she had told me that he died. And I broke down. And I screamed loud as I could. I had some kind of cup in my hand, but I didn't even realize that I had crushed it in my hand by the time I had gotten outside, because the cops had already informed me that they weren't going to press any charges for the time being. So they were going to let me leave with my sister and my mom. And by the time I got outside, I had a cup in my hand that I could keep crushed. I couldn't hardly walk.
Yeah.
I was so broken. It was very...
Sounds pretty
hard.
Sounds pretty fucking traumatic, man.
Yeah, it was very, very, very hard.
Now, given
that you killed a man that had been in your life that you loved for 23 years.
Given your past record, were you scared that, you know, they were going to take that into consideration when it actually, you know, they started looking at some of the facts and stuff like that? Or, you know, maybe, you know, were you thinking that, you know, the actual scene and the fact, you know, that you had that story, and then, you know, your mom being there and stuff like that? I mean, I know you touched base a little bit on, you know, you didn't know, you know, whether or not you'd be going to fucking, you know, prison, man, you know, like.
Yeah. No, actually, I was very, very scared of what was going to happen, because they had just told me that they were going to let me leave and they weren't going to press any charges for the time being.
Yeah.
For the time being. So over the next couple of weeks, they called me and my sister and my mom and Heather in, and we all went in, and they asked for our phone so they could download everything off of those.
Mm-hmm.
And they took my mom took pictures of her from head to toe. We both, well, I was really, really covered in bruises. Mom had bruises on her. And so they took pictures, and they just kept telling me, we will let you know. Be looking for a call from us here in a little while to let you know what's going on. Well, and through all this time, there was news cameras around in our driveway every day. It was all over the news. It was all over the internet. It was in the paper. His family by now were ready to come and burn me at the stake.
Yeah.
You know, because they had no idea. Only thing they thought was that I just walked in the room and killed the man in cold blood. They didn't. In their minds, he was an angel, and I had just walked in and murdered the man for no reason at all. I was really afraid, because the cops kept telling me that his side of the family were calling them and really, really pushing for them to charge me with first-degree murder.
Yeah.
And so they said, we can't really tell you anything that's going on right now, but we'll let you know. It was a month later, I got a call from the district attorney. He asked for all of us to come in, because he was going to sit down and let us know what they had decided. And I said, do I need to bring a lawyer? And he said, I can't give you any advice on what to do. I said, I know you can't. I said, but I'm not coming in there to get arrested if I don't have a lawyer with me ready to go. You know, well, you do what you need to do, but we need you to be up here at 9:30 this morning, and ready to deal with it. And I'm like, all right. So, you know, I kissed everybody goodbye, and me and my mom, sister and girlfriend headed up there. And we got to the courthouse, and they led us into this room. It was like a meeting room, a boardroom type thing. Me and my family sat on one side. The DA, cops that were involved, sat on the other side, and basically, right off the bat, they said, well, we want to go ahead and let you know that we have really, really looked through this entire case and all the details, and we have decided that we are not going to press any charges whatsoever. This is one of the most clear cases of self-defense that I have ever seen, given the history of abuse that we have on record from this man to your mom. And your story, and there's no conflict at all with any of the evidence, any of the stories. So we're gonna just we're gonna chalk it up as justifiable homicide, self-defense. That'll be the end of it. And the only thing they really wanted to know was if we wanted them to release a press release stating what they had decided. And I said, absolutely, man, because I want everybody to know, you know, on his side of the family that not only are you not pressing charges, but why you're not pressing charges.
Now, what was his family's reaction? I mean, I can imagine your side of the family's reaction. I mean, probably a hell of a lot of relief, right?
Well, to be honest, even to this day, really, we've been shunned by both sides, because my mom's side at first were with us, but it seems as if over time they're scared to be around me. Like they don't want to really have anything to do with us anymore, and it's really just became to the point where it's me, my mom, my sister, and my fiance now, and that's it. You know, and like, well, there's nobody else who will really talk to us or now there are a couple of people on our side of the family and his side of the family, surprisingly, that are friends with me on Facebook and still will speak to me from time to time to this day. But it took a long time for just a couple of people to come around. And I went out to lunch with a couple of them. I was scared for my life.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if they were going to retaliate. But there's a minute few who are understanding.
So after all that happened, you know, you said you pretty much got shunned. You know, how did the community look at you? Like the, you know, people in town, you know, because I know this is
real crazy, but everywhere I would go, it was almost as if I was trying to put myself inside of everybody else's mind. And it seemed like, without thinking, oh God, what do they think of me? Oh God, do they know what happened? Or oh God, are they going to beat me up or kill me because, you know, I killed my stepdad? Or, you know, it was more me than them, though. Because it was surprising to me that very few people actually have any idea of what happened at all, much less than me. And I felt better about keeping it that way at first, because this wasn't something that I just went around and told everybody about, you know, like that, because I didn't want anybody to get the wrong idea. It's a long story. If you just hear what happened that day, you might think, well, you know, you should have been arrested. You should have been convicted. And I understand if some people had that opinion, but at the same time, it's a long story, and I didn't feel comfortable telling everybody at the time.
Yeah, that's totally understandable, man. That's, I mean, in all honesty, like looking at it from as a person, I don't know. Just this is kind of why I wanted to not really get too many details about it before me and you did this interview, because I wanted to look at it from fresh ears perspective. And to be honest with you, man, it seems like, when it comes down to it, man, it's whether or not you want to live. In the rage it sounded like he was in, it wouldn't have stopped at you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, and yeah.
And that's something that scares me even to this day, is the fact that I think about it every now and then, and it puts me, and I put myself back in that situation, and how easy would it have been if he would have gotten those knives away from him? And not only started with me, but finished with my parents and, I mean, my my mom and my sister and my girlfriend, you know, him or me, you know, I mean.
And like you said, he was a big enough guy that at that point in time, there weren't too many options.
He was a beast. He really was. He had that strength, you know what I'm saying?
Like, oh, yeah.
Like people you look at sometimes that you don't think are very strong, but then when they get a hold of you, you're done.
No, that's totally, you know, that's fucking hell of a story, man. That's, I mean, how are you doing nowadays? Like, has all that affected you to the point where, I don't want to say, like, you have PTSD or anything, you know, of that nature, but, I mean, you said you thought about it a lot. Do you?
Yeah, it's hard to get through some days, man. Because, like I said, I blame myself. Still, to this day, hearing anybody tell me that, you know, you did what you had to do doesn't really make it any easier. He was still my stepdad. I still love the man. He was in my life for 23 years. And I challenge anybody to look back at their life at somebody who's been in it for 23 years. And I could be away from them, no problem. It wouldn't bother me. They'd be a liar.
That's the reality of the situation is, you know, self-defense against somebody who's robbing your ass on the street compared to somebody who's been a father figure for 23 years, man.
Right. Exactly right, man.
That's a big fucking difference, man.
But, you know, like I say, I've been clean for 2.5 years now, man. I've got my own life now. I live with my girlfriend. My mom lives on her own.
I was going to ask, how's your mom doing?
She's been on a couple of dates, but she's learned she's probably better off alone right now. She's 50 years old. She I don't think she's interested in having a long-term relationship with anybody. Mm-hmm. I think she's just content to put the money that she has and live the rest of her life with just the family and make sure we're okay when she's gone. I think she's just content doing that. But I always try to make sure she's okay. I try to keep a good relationship with her and let her know I love her. And, you know, I've told her several times how sorry I am. And I told her if she wants to be mad, to yell at me or scream at me or hit me or shun me or she, you know, anything like that, she can. And I'll understand, you know, but she's never once done. She's always tried to make me feel like what was done had to be done. And she's not mad at me. It's not applicable, you know.
I mean, the fact that you would be, I know this might sound weird, but the fact that you are willing to look at her and say, you can hate me, it's okay, you know, it says a lot, man. You know what I mean? It's pretty amazing, man. I mean, I'm kind of speechless, man. It's not too often I don't have a shitload of stuff to say, man, but that's crazy, man. So I guess
I really do appreciate you giving me a chance, though, and a platform to be able to tell this story and so that everybody can hear it. And, you know, I welcome, you know, any questions, any feedback, anything like that from anybody. If anybody wants to know anything else, you know, I'm more than happy to talk to them. I don't know if you want me to give any information as far as my Facebook or anything like that.
Actually, what I'm going to do is when I post the episode, I'm going to see if you want to join the group and see if people have some questions. And if so, I'll tag you in it and we can kind of go from there. The way you presented your version of events, though, is understandable. But I think people are going to want, I don't know, I don't want to say they're going to want to know the personal aspects of how it affected you afterward or just crime scene details or whatever, you know, stuff like that. And like I told you before we started, you don't have to say anything you don't feel comfortable saying, man, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, I'm open. You know, I'm willing to talk to anybody, you know what I'm saying? I'm just... And I'm willing to hear any opinion, you know what I'm saying? And anybody has any thoughts on it, I'm open to that. Because, you know, I'm not the kind of person who wants people to think that he was just such a bad guy and he deserved what happened to him and I'm some angel, because that's not the way things went down, and that is not true. Not anywhere near the truth. He was a good man. I love him. You know, even with his flaws.
I mean, he was your, you know, he's pretty much your dad, man. He was the one who was there, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
that can't be an easy situation for anybody at all, right. You know. But I guess, do you have any closing thoughts or statements or anything that you would like to say to people who just heard your story?
Well, just once again, man, I want to thank you for the opportunity, man. It really means a lot to me, and I appreciate you, and I wish you the best of luck, man. I hope that you grow exponentially, man. You're able to do this full time, because I'd be very interested to hear anything you put out. It's a blessing, man. It really is. It really helps me through my day, and it helps me to get my mind off things. And I really appreciate it, man. I can't say thank you.
Oh, man, you ain't got to thank me, dude. Like I said, everybody deserves their story to be told. And when I started, when you had mentioned this and I started reading into it, it was pretty evident, man, that you had a lot to say. And I don't think people understood your version of events. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can tell them 10,000 times over, you know, hey, I didn't want to do this, but I had to. But the way that it happened, and the fact that this was not just some random person, I think is very important for people to know, man, you know. But no, I appreciate you coming on, and you know, people don't get to hear about, you know, especially in the true crime genre, they don't get to hear about people who have to kill that didn't fucking want to.
I wanted this to be kind of on file too for my kids when they get older, you know, or for anybody through my family line when they get older, if they ever have any questions, to be able to listen to this, know the whole story, and know what happened, because, you know, I think that's important.
Yeah.
Real quick, if you don't mind, I actually want to give a shout out to my kids and say, Corbin, Xander, Tyler, and my girlfriend Heather, and my mom.
Yeah.
Teresa, I love all of you. I love all of you, and I hope this is a blessing to you as much as it is to me.
You know, I'm glad you gave them shout outs, man. Is there anybody else you want to say hi to or anything, man? Because there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, man.
my sister, Christy, and her husband, Pete, my nephews, man. That's about the extent of our family.
Hey, you know what? There ain't nothing wrong with that, man. I keep my circle pretty small myself, you know. So, yeah.
Especially when you've been a drug addict and you get off drugs, you find that it's not really easy to make friends, because the people that you were hanging around, they weren't your friends in the first place, and you just decide, well, you know, it's better off, I'll just probably hang out by myself, because
yeah, and that's definitely a very real thing too, man. That's a very real situation. But man, I can't thank you enough for coming on here, dude. It's fucking awesome, man. I got the utmost respect for you in the world, dude.
You're welcome, bro. I appreciate you.
All right, man. Well, I'm going to go ahead and cut the line and just say I'll see you later, man. I'll talk to you again. I'll keep in touch. And, you know, when I go to post this, I'll be sure, you know, I pull you in and all that good stuff, man. I'll send you the links and all that good stuff. So.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate it, man.
All right. I appreciate it too, man.
All right. Bye-bye. All right,
bye.